You know, I always like to take this opportunity to talk about myself.
Woo!
Looking man, the best dressed man. You know why? Woo, because my name's Ric Flair.
Woo!
Hello and welcome back to the only 7-star wrestling radio show on planet Earth. This is Indie Wrestling Radio. I am the Sly One, Jordan Fox, and with me, as always, Mr. Floyd Johnson Jr. Floyd, what's up, bro?
Dude, this is Becky Lynch's world. I'm just living in it.
Oh my God, you ain't lying.
It's very few times that a go-home show has this much buzz. I am looking forward to talking about it.
I know, man. And so, like, I think a lot of people listen to our show because we are different in the sense that so many people, and, you know, we're not immune to it, but so many people dog the WWE product. And we dog it a lot, you know what I mean? But I was listening to Wrestling Observer Radio with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez early this morning when I was making coffee and stuff, and they just absolutely hated every bit of this episode. So I was like, oh man, this is going to be, this sounds like it's going to be bad. And I turned it on and I watched it this morning at 4, 5, and 6 this morning, and dude, I thought it was a great episode.
I
thought it was great. So I think a lot of people listen to our show because I think more people probably tend to fall on our side of things more often than maybe Meltzer and Alvarez's side. I think people enjoy it a little bit more than they do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I think we have more of an optimistic view most times of WWE. And like I said, we don't shy away from dogging it, but I mean, you got to give WWE its due credit whenever it's deserved. And last night I thought was well deserved.
Yeah, I think with Alvarez and Meltzer, just my little thought, it's their job to watch wrestling.
Right.
I think you, no matter what, you're going to review, see, and have a different opinion on wrestling. Like me, I just watch it. You know, I don't really make any money off the wrestling business. Actually, don't make any money off the wrestling business. I just watch it. So my opinions are on, literally, did that entertain me or not? There's no big scope of things. They don't have that same scope that I do.
Right, right. I get that. Yeah, I get that for sure. I get that for sure. Well, let's jump into it, man, shall we?
I'm ready.
All right, dude. Well, so we start off the show. They give a salute to service, which I thought was pretty cool. You know, I'm an Iraq war vet myself. The Raw Tag Team Battle Royal is what we start off with, and all the Raw tag teams that are not champions basically are in there. You had the Revival, Lucha House Party, Dissension.
Yeah, the Ascension, and you had Rude and Gable.
Yeah, Rude and Gable. That's another one that I was thinking of. Heath Slater and Rhino. Everyone, AOP wasn't in there. Obviously, Dolph and Drew wasn't in there, but they're just as much singles competitors as they are tag team. I can't really think of anyone else that was missing. But what, you think it went 30, 45 seconds? About 30, 45 seconds in, Lucha House Party was getting some cool moves in, and then Braun Strowman comes down and pretty much Fs up everyone's day.
Yeah. And it's awesome. It's one of those things that generally, if it wasn't Braun, it would bother me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because right. I don't think any one guy should be able to beat up 8 other professional wrestlers. But you're kind of playing the comic book game, and Ron is the Incredible Hulk. So he came out an Incredible Hulk to all of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of was going to go the same route there that you kind of did just bury all of the tag teams. But what they do, you know, they're trying to get Braun over, and I can kind of, like, I could argue both points, basically. I could argue why you would want to do it. And really, at this point, you've buried Revival so much. You've buried Heath Slater and Rhino. I mean, it really, at this point, is one more time really going to kill them? You know what I mean? I don't condone doing it all the time, but...
If fans still like them, then nothing's going to change because all the Rival do is lose.
Right. So at that point, Stephanie shows up. Well, actually, Braun says he ain't leaving until Baron Corbin comes out and gets these hands. So he grabs a chair. He's just chilling out. And Stephanie McMahon's music hits. She comes in, she says, I know you're pissed, blah, blah, blah. But that doesn't mean you can hold Raw hostage. She wants him to channel his anger for Sunday's Survivor Series match so that Raw can win. Braun says he doesn't give a damn about Shane or representing her or Raw at Survivor Series. She orders him to give a damn. Well, you better start, Karen. He says my favorite line of the night, I think. He says, I know you and the rest of whomever look at me like I'm just some mindless meat castle. But I know what you're doing, and I want Baron Corbin out here right now. Stephanie makes a deal with him, and if he'll help Raw win at Survivor Series by, you know, in beating Shane, he gets whatever he wants. Braun wants a rematch with Lesnar. But before that, he wants Baron Corbin. He wants to pick the stipulation. Stephanie agrees to all of it, but says you can't touch Corbin until after Survivor Series. You need to prove that you're a team player, and you'll get whatever you want. He agrees, and Braun says, if you don't come through on all your promises, I'm going straight to the headquarters building, I guess in Stamford, Connecticut, and I'm going to make everyone get these hands. Yeah. So what'd you think so far?
I thought that was a hot opening. I thought it was an ingenious take by Braun to get what he wanted out of the situation. My whole thing, I had a thought. I was like, the one thing I would have changed, because he's like, oh, I'm going to get these title shots. I'm going to get stiff. And you got to throw in there the date. They're going to try to say Braun left something out if he ends up winning it.
Yeah, they'll try to find some stipulation or, like, some way to avoid it, right?
Yeah, like, I said you get Baron Corbin, but I never said when you get Baron Corbin.
Right, right. Yeah, I could see that happening. You said it was a hot opening, and it only gets hotter because right around this time, after Stephanie agrees to everything, Ronda Rousey shows up. She comes out. The crowd's going pretty wild at this point, you know, thinking back to the history that Stephanie and Ronda Rousey have. Steph tries to play nice as Ronda gets in, but Ronda takes the mic and tells her to quit the pep talk. Ronda's been waiting for a challenge like Becky Lynch since she got to the WWE. I think Baron Corbin comes out about now. Baron Corbin says they need to focus on beating SmackDown. Braun wants to kick his ass. You know, Corbin's trying to work in a pep talk and says they can't be overconfident, and Ronda judo tosses Baron Corbin and then just walks out. Stephanie begs them not to fight as Braun promises to neuter him at Survivor Series. I think he actually said neuter him, didn't he?
That's exactly what he said, and for the life of me, you can tell me the script as you want. I don't want to be Baron Corbin.
No, you're right, man. Even if I knew that, you know, like Braun was my friend, if we were out in front of 18,000 people and he was talking to me like that, I'd still get a little sweat bead on my forehead. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Let's say this dude's about to chuck you around the ring, and you're not going to get very much offense in.
Just to recap the opening there, I agree with you. I don't think it was the best thing in the world to have Braun single-handedly kill the tag division. I think something that maybe you could have done better was just they part like the Red Sea, like everyone just takes off, and maybe like one team tries to attack them.
Yeah,
Not, you know what I mean? And the
that's
rest
even,
of them
yeah.
just slide out underneath the bottom turnbuckle, scared underneath the bottom rope, and just everyone takes off. Besides, like the Ascension, they try to attack him, and he kills them.
Yeah, that would make sense. Everybody, as soon as he steps in the ring, everybody jumps out of the ring, kind of stick their hands up, like, "Hey, dude, I don't want none of that."
Right. But yeah, the rest of it was pretty solid build, man. I think we go to commercial at that point. We come back, we get our first match, which was Ember Moon versus Tamina. Nia Jax was out there with Tamina. Tamina ends up beating Ember Moon by pin, 8 minutes and 35 seconds. I didn't think this was a very good match, man. What about you?
Well, Tamina's not a very good worker.
Exactly.
They did what they could. The point is was to get the Tamina and Nia Jax alliance over, and they did a good job with that.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, the pet peeve. I actually wrote this down.
Uh-oh.
So, in the midst of storytelling for wrestling, I understand your job as the announcer is to tell a beautiful story.
Right.
But you have to be able to tell your boss when the story is stupid. So, Michael Cole, and I don't know if you heard this, he was driving home the fact that that Ember Moon grew up watching Nia Jax wrestle, and Nia Jax was her hero. Nia Jax started training at the WWE Performance Center in 2014.
Yeah, that's a little weird. I kind of picked up
Started
on that.
training at the WWE Performance Center in 2014. Ember Moon has been wrestling since 2010. So she is idolizing someone that has literally wrestled half as long as her.
Is this a hole in the storyline, or did he maybe mean Tamina? Because Tamina's been wrestling a little while, right?
He had no, because he kept saying her and Nia were partners, and that was no, it's just a really massive knowledge hole.
I see, man. Yeah,
Yeah.
that makes absolutely no sense.
Yes. Yes. I'm like, she's been doing this twice as long as Nia Jax.
Yeah.
I love Nia. She's better than Nia.
Yeah.
How's she looking up to Nia in any way?
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't get it.
Nia got fast tracked because she's related to The Rock. It sucks. It sucks. Some people, you want everything to be about merit, but we live in the real world.
Right.
But I just, dude, somebody has to tap Michael Cole on the shoulder and say, that storyline doesn't make like any sense.
Right,
Now,
right.
wrestling storylines, stalking wives, and blah, blah, blah. Most storylines don't make sense. But that storyline you can destroy in a quick Google search.
Yeah, I heard that at the beginning of the match, and I thought, to be honest, I think I just let it pass without saying or writing anything down, because I think my thought process was he probably just meant Tamina, because Tamina's been wrestling for a decade like that, and I don't even know if that's true. I just, for some reason, I'm thinking that she has. You know what I
No,
mean?
she was the Usos' original manager. She's been wrestling forever.
Okay, yeah. See, so that's probably what I thought, but that's obviously not what he meant. Like he said it right. That was written for him, right?
Yeah, he said what was written. It was just, that was horrible. I was just like, that's just bad. I mean, man, there's so many. Let me put a tiny twist on what they're saying. She is heartbroken because they were in the performance center together, and she thought they were really friends to the point that Nia got called up first. And guess who opened up the door for when Ember Moon debuted? Nia Jax. You say that, it's still the same story.
Right.
Without the broken timeline. Hey, Jordan, I've looked up to you my whole life. Oh, well, you're older than me. Huh. I don't know how that works then.
Weird. does Ember Moon feel wasted right now? Because, I mean, all she's just being used to put over this Tamina-Nia Jax alliance.
And I say this, and it feels like every week. The problem is everybody's getting pushed down for Ronda.
Yeah.
Like, wherever you were, you're a step below because Ronda was there.
Yeah. That's a valid point.
You know, when people say, well, no one takes anyone's spot. No, she took everyone's spot. She, like, Sasha and Bayley have disappeared. Ember Moon, you know, they gave her a mini push, but she's disappeared. Dana Brooks, most people forget she's on the roster because everybody got pushed down once Ronda got in there.
That's a true story. Very true story. And I've got plenty to say about Ronda and a couple different things that she did last night that that we'll talk about when we get to her here momentarily. Next, we get probably one of my favorite storylines in all of wrestling right now, and which is highlights of the Seth Rollins-Dean Ambrose drama, including we get to see a recap of Rollins losing the tag titles to Authors of Pain. Corey Graves in the ring now with a special interview of Seth Rollins. Graves asks him about his match at Survivor Series, and Rollins says that he's hyped for the match with Nakamura, but he doesn't give a damn about it. So it was kind of like he kind of went both ways with it. You know what I mean? He said, I'm hyped about it, but I don't give a damn about it right now. So kind of another small hole there, but he does kind of go on to talk about that he's going to get focused for Sunday, but for tonight, he wants answers from Ambrose. Graves says that Ambrose usually only speaks with actions, and Rollins says he's not stupid, but says he's not man enough to explain himself. Ambrose shows up on the Titantron. Do we still call it the Titantron?
That's what I call it.
Yeah, I've always called it Titantron, but, you know, it used to be like the big, remember when it was like in the old Raw is War deal where it was like had the, like the tight, you know, like it was, I don't know, it was just different. I don't know. They don't ever reference it anymore.
No, they just call it like the screen or the video board or whatever.
Yeah, I wonder if it's still the Titantron. I'm going to have to Google that later. Anyway, Ambrose shows up on the Titantron. He's sitting on a car by a fire barrel. I thought was a cool. Did you think that was corny or did you think that was cool? Because I thought it was a cool visual.
I thought it was really cool. It's just one part that I thought was weird, and we'll talk about it in just a second.
Okay, because I thought it was a cool visual, but I seen on Instagram where someone was kind of dogging it, saying it looked kind of garbage. But me myself, I thought it was a cool visual. Him just propped up on this car, like on the hood, you know, just chilling. And there's a, you know, like a trash barrel burning beside him. I thought it was pretty cool. Ambrose goes on to say he doesn't owe anyone anything because they don't deserve it. He mocks the fans for their response to his actions and says he's always been the same guy but was too selfish and self-absorbed to see what was happening around him. He used to think the Shield made him strong, but instead they made him weak, always having to watch their back instead of his own, instead of caring about his own needs. But it's a new day and a chance to be reborn. And that's when he throws in his Shield gear, his vest, his riot, not his riot, it's
yeah,
not a riot
his
vest,
vest,
but
yeah.
Yeah, his Shield vest. And Rollins, I thought, played it off good. Rollins looked like very emotional, like he was going to cry. He was shaking his head, not wanting to watch him throw it in the barrel. I thought it was pretty cool when Rollins pops up and doesn't say anything more to Graves and heads backstage. So what one part did you want to talk about that you said you thought was kind of weird?
When he burned the suit, I just thought that was such a powerful message. But right before then, how he was putting the gasoline on the jacket and he was like shaking it, and he was like, "Dude, that would be." It looked like, I know it wasn't gas, but it would have gotten as much on him as he got on the jacket.
Yeah, I didn't write that down. I should have wrote that down. Yeah, it was kind of weird how if you were doing it in real life, I feel like you would have just poured it on there. You wouldn't have shook it because
Yeah.
it just got all over everything. You like got
Yeah.
all over your hands and everything else. Yeah.
And you're about to stand next to open flame. You don't really want gasoline on you.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that part kind of killed it a little bit, but overall, I still think
Yeah,
it was pretty cool.
that was nitpicky, Floyd. I thought the segment was really well worked. I thought they took a different twist on the Shield and him breaking up the Shield. It make it feels a lot more. It honestly feels more personal than when Seth did it. You know, Seth was doing it to get gain. You know, he was doing it to get a try to get a championship.
Right.
But Dean, it seems personal. Like, I don't need you. And I think it's gonna turn into some good matches.
I agree. I agree 100%. It is way more personal with Ambrose breaking him up. Yeah, like you said, with Seth Rollins, it seemed like he didn't have a grudge against him. It felt like Seth Rollins could have came out and told everyone, "Guys, it's not personal. It's just business." But with
Yeah.
Ambrose, it's like, "Guys, I don't care about no damn championship. This is personal." Does that make sense?
That definitely makes sense.
Gotcha. I thought, like I said, I thought it was a cool segment. Afterwards, they go to, and people, I've seen a couple people, or not seen a couple people, but I heard Brian Alvarez dog this part too. And that's when the segment was over. Michael Cole asked Renee Young about it. Like, we know that you're obviously close to Dean. Has he said anything about it? And she says, he's being extremely quiet and non-talkative about it. It's a very uncomfortable situation. Alvarez and Dave Meltzer both kind of shit on that. But again, I thought that was a nice touch.
I thought it was so awesome. I felt like that should have shut up the haters. You're like, she doesn't know what her husband's doing it. And I was like, no, okay, they addressed it. She says he's quiet, he's to himself, he doesn't tell me everything. Boom, now you can stop saying it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, his wife's sitting there telling you he's tormented about it. He doesn't want to talk about it. He says not to bring it up. Like, come on, like, what more do you want from her? So anyway, yeah. Next we see a look back on Drew McIntyre basically putting Kurt Angle down last week where he beat him up and he could have pinned him, but instead he talked the trash to him, and then he ends up beating him with the angle slam and the ankle lock and all that. Just really, putting him to shame, basically, you know?
Yeah, he did not want to beat him. He went out to humiliate him.
Yeah, humiliate him. That's a perfect way to put it, Floyd. You're the man. But anyway, Kurt, it turns out Kurt Angle's not dead because we get his music. It hits, and we're about to, we get the You Suck chant, and all of a sudden we get the record scratch, and it's Dolph Ziggler coming out. The next we get Drew McIntyre coming out. Drew says he told us he'd take over, and now we need to start believing what he says. He broke the Shield, and then he broke Kurt Angle. Angle went into there. He said this: Angle went into our match an icon, Hall of Famer, and an Olympian, and left an embarrassment. Angle gave him everything, but when he looked into his eyes, Angle's will left him. I thought that was very powerful. That was very powerful.
This is how you build a heel, and this is how you build a badass heel.
I like it. I like it.
You know what I mean? In the new day and age, that's how you build a heel.
I agree. I agree. Do you think, we're going to see world champion Drew McIntyre in the near
Oh,
future.
definitely. Oh my God, definitely. And honestly, when people ask me if anybody on the roster who you would put the build on a belt on. Who you would build your brand around? Drew McIntyre that's who I would build my brand around. That's who I would build my WWE around.
I like it. I like it,
He is the
man.
perfect mixture of size, mic work, and he can wrestle. He can do all of it. You know how they say, well, you can do it the WWE way or you can't do it. Drew McIntyre is a utility player. He can do it all.
Yeah, and it's I know you will agree with me on this. It is very rare. It's not as rare as it was 20 years ago, but it is still very rare to see someone as big, and that's height and muscle-wise, as Drew McIntyre, that is as agile as him and as good on the microphone as him.
Yeah, that's what I was like. It's like, the one thing is, he's as big as Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Maybe 10 pounds, 20 pounds, maybe, but he's just as big as Brock Lesnar. He's just as tall as Braun Strowman.
He is, isn't you know? He? Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the few people Braun Strowman just doesn't tower over. And he, you know, he looks like if he hits Braun Strowman, it should hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but you could also buy him losing to, he's so slender, you can still buy him losing to someone like Finn Balor or, you know, or someone smaller or whatever.
Right.
So it's like he's in that perfect height-weight ratio to be able to work with anybody and put on great matches.
Yep. Yep, I agree. Drew goes on to say that Raw is his show now, and he will mold it in his image. And there's no more room for weakness or nostalgia acts, is what he said. At that point, Finn Balor arrives. Drew says Balor's got guts for coming out here following last week's ass beatings, what he said. Balor couldn't just listen to him talk because he crossed the line last week. He could have just beaten Kurt Angle and not humiliate him. Drew says dignity is not a right, and he could have done a lot worse. He goes on to say that Balor is what was wrong with this place because he's too concerned with emotions and feelings. Balor says he's sick of him being a bully and challenges him to a match right now. Drew agrees but says it's not going to be with me. It's going to be with my boy Ziggler here. If Balor wins, Drew will consider lowering himself to Balor's level. Drew then kills Balor with a headbutt when he's not paying attention.
How you build a heel. This is how you build a heel.
Yep.
This is textbook badass heel. I am not nefarious. I am not afraid of you, heel. This is I am a dick heel.
Right. I like it.
I just think I'm better than you, heel.
I like it. You think, is it a possibility, let's say in the next 3 years, we'll say 3 years. In the next 3 years, do you think you could see Drew properly built up enough where he is legit closing out WrestleMania in the next three years?
Yes. I mean, to me, Drew McIntyre, with his work ethic, he's kind of can't miss right now. It's just they're doing it the right way. It's been slow. You know, he debuted with Dolph. And, you know, they had the tag team belts. By that slow, I mean by WWE means and New Age means, it's been a slow push. You don't see him get pinned. You don't see him get pinned. You don't see him look weak very often. This is a perfect build.
Yeah.
Even if they were, let's just say Roman was still the champ. Roman was still here. Even if they were building Drew just to lose to Roman, to make Roman, it would still be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I disagree with you one bit, Floyd, to be honest with you. I think everything they're doing with McIntyre right now, I think they're doing an awesome job of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're making him look dominant, but he still has got a few flaws, you know what I mean? And he obviously, you know, he's fearless. But, you know, you can also tell that he kind of fears losing to Baron Corbin at the same time. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he's there's chinks in his armor, but he's still extremely dominant, like, at the same time. You know what I mean? I don't really know how to explain it, but, like, I know I'm not doing it justice, but, yeah, I mean, you're just building a dominant heel that you can tell, like, man, like, I know someone can beat him. I can't tell you how, but someone can beat him. You know what I mean? And he's such a dick, I hope they beat him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I absolutely know what you mean. And it's just, that's why I give WWE shit for a lot of things. I do not give them shit for how they're building Drew McIntyre. It is pitch perfect. They're going to get more praise later on in the show. So.
Word. So the match goes 12 minutes and 20 seconds, and Finn Balor actually defeats Dolph Ziggler. And I was surprised Finn Balor was able to escape without the expected beatdown. I figured once I seen Balor win that Drew was going to come in and Finn was going to get the beatdown. But he actually, there was no beatdown tonight, and Balor walks out tall. Stephanie congratulates Finn on his win and standing up to Drew and adds him to the Survivor Series team. Baron Corbin isn't happy, and Drew arrives and complains. Stephanie gives them all a pep talk and knows they can destroy Shane and SmackDown. And she says after they win, they can all tear each other apart. They hype the Becky Lynch versus Ronda Rousey match. Then they got Ronda backstage to have a few comments. They're interviewing her, basically. This right here is my least favorite part of the night. And let me tell you why. I did not like Ronda Rousey's promo right here. She says, how do I explain this? Like, at first, I liked what she talked about. She was like, while she was learning the alphabet, I was learning arm bars. While she was learning, you know, her multiplication tables, I was learning arm bars. Like, I liked that, but then when she went into, you're the millennial man wearing skinny jeans, and I think she might have mentioned maybe participation trophies or something like that, and I'm just like, I don't really like that. And on top of that, the crowd didn't know how to take it either. If you heard when she was saying that,
she just insulted most of the crowd.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know what I mean? And yeah, on a personal note, like I, cause I'm a millennial and I take offense to when I see people that are a generation above us talking, you know, oh, millennials, they're so soft these days and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, first off, you know, millennials didn't ask for participation trophies. You know, our parents are the ones that fought for those participation trophies. And second, the millennials are the ones that just went and destroyed, you know, just went and died by the thousands fighting two wars that the generation before us started in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, I mean, who are these people to say that we're soft? You know, that's me on a personal level. But, you know,
I'm what's called a Xennial, but it, you know, I had been lumped in as a millennial most of my life, and I'm just like, I don't believe in participation trophies at all.
Right.
I'm one of the hardest people. Like, as nice as I am, I'm one of the hardest people when it comes to, I think success should be earned. You know what I mean? I work very, very, very hard, and I don't expect anything to be given to me. And that's not me patting myself on the back or anything like that. It's just who my personality is. So it's like we do get lumped into that, but it's just everybody's different, you know? I thought it was kind of a tone-deaf promo that doesn't apply to Becky Lynch at all.
Uh-oh, that is your Cody coming out? Is Cody coming to the ring?
That's my ringer on my phone.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. I mean,
Becky has worked and clawed in wrestling. She's been wrestling since she was 13. She's trained, and she's watched several people that are less talented than her put in front of her. Like I said, the promo was tone deaf.
Yeah, I agree.
If you wanted to aim this promo at Alexa Bliss, okay. You wanted to aim this promo at Nia Jax, who kind of just got pushed to the front of the line in the WWE. Okay. The Bellas. Maybe. I think what people don't know, Bellas ate a lot of shit in the WWE before they got their shine.
Right.
And so, no, it's like, but for Becky Lynch, she is the workhorse. She is the hardworking. She's the people's champ. That promo just didn't fit. And you know what? Ronda has had one of those things. I can't say they've done much wrong with her, but that was a swing and a miss.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Meltzer and Brian Alvarez said that they felt like there was a possibility that maybe Ronda wrote that, and if she didn't write it, maybe she had some input in it. And, you know, I can kind of understand, as hard as Ronda works, like, even though I completely disagree with everything she said, I understand, you know, her having like a hardened look of other people because of how hard she works, because I don't think, you know, she worked very hard, and sometimes, and you know, you and I can probably attest to this, when you work very hard for something, sometimes you might get the mindset that maybe someone else didn't, if you don't know their story, you might think that they didn't work as hard as you. But we all know Ronda worked hard, but when we look at Becky, everyone knows Becky's story, and everyone knows that Becky worked really hard, if not harder than Ronda, to get where she's at too. You know what I mean? So like you said, it was very tone deaf, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, we got to try, I mean, but look who Ronda's married to, and I'm not saying this in an insulting way, but she's married to the big, tall MMA guy that they want to live in the woods. He's the big man's man type of guy. So I could definitely see, you know, that being something she wanted to say, but it's one of those things, you don't have to say all your good stuff now.
Yeah, yeah, I got that. That's a good
point.
You mean,
you could have saved that for who it fits with. That fit with Charlotte Flair.
Yeah.
That would have been a perfect thing for Charlotte Flair. Because Charlotte Flair, you know, has, you know, daddy's girl, woke up with, a lot of money. You know, pretty much as soon as she jumped in the WWE, they were talking about how she was the greatest wrestler alive. It fits.
Yeah, I agree.
It didn't fit with Becky. Yep. It just doesn't fit.
I agree. I think there's plenty of characters that in kayfabe that would have fit, and I don't think Becky was one of them. I think you and I see very eye to eye on that one right there, that it was, I think tone deaf is what you used, and I think that's the perfect analogy. That's the perfect way to express how I feel on that one as well. But I have to say, even though it was my least favorite part of the night in regards to what she said, she didn't stumble over a single word, and she made me believe it. I mean, she looked right at the camera. She had like fire in her eyes. She was intense. I believed it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She's, I say it every time we talk about Ronda. I would go as far as to say, like, I was kind of a Ronda hater when she first came in. I was like, what, this girl, it's going to take years for her to play catch up, and it hasn't, you know what I mean? Like, she's, you know, there's some more slip ups that I'll talk about at the end of the show, but I mean, she's caught on so much faster than I ever imagined that she would. Are you surprised at all that she's caught on so quick, or did you know from day one, did you expect her?
I believed that she would because she loved it. And her judo coach was Gene LaBelle, who wrestled for like a lot of years and worked with Roddy Piper. So, and she seemed to have the right people to make the transition and listen to the right people when it comes to making the transition. So I thought she was going to be successful. And the great thing about it is judo is one of those things, and Taz was a judo person.
Oh, really?
That transitions, it transitions to wrestling very well, because all the throws and stuff, it's what you've been doing your whole life.
Oh, I got you. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that that's what Taz did. Taz is like, you know, the suplex machine that he portrayed like in ECW and stuff. A lot of that was kind of judo based.
Yes.
Really? That's really cool. I did not know that. Dude, I used to think Taz was such a badass when I was a kid watching ECW.
I still think Taz is a badass. I would meet that 5'7 dude and be afraid of him. Like, dude, he's like I've crossed off so many people on my list. He's one I haven't. You know, since WrestleMania is in New York and he's in New York, I'm hoping he does a WrestleCon this year.
Yeah. Do they ever have like any ECW like WrestleCon type deals where they like, you know, have all the old ECW guys come in for pictures and autographs and stuff?
They don't as much anymore. They might this year, but what happens is, like, you got the Dudleys that are good with the WWE, Tommy Dreamer that's good with the WWE, but then you got people like Sabu that don't have that great relationship with the WWE, so it's hard. And Shane Douglas,
and
it's hard to get them all together.
Yeah, that was someone that, like, I was thinking of Shane Douglas, Francine, and Raven. Those three people were the ones that come to mind. Like, I wonder if they're ever out and about signing autographs, you know?
Yeah, you're going to be able to, you could drop a lot of money because all those people, most of those people weren't in New Orleans, but all of those people are going to be in New York.
Oh, snap, bro.
Because everyone lives on the East Coast. Everyone lives up there anyway.
Gotcha. I like it, man. I like it. Next, we see Ruby Riott come out and apologize for breaking Jim the Anvil Neidhart's sunglasses last week and humiliating Natalya. But she loved every second of it because she's a big faker.
I didn't like this because, honestly, this has been Alexa Bliss's, like, calling card promo. For, like, about the year, she's been doing it where she sounds like she's sad and then she goes evil. I would have liked Ruby Riott to just come out evil and stay evil. It just felt tired because I've seen it so much.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would have played better with Ruby coming out and being just like, na 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 na.
Yeah, like maybe had the broken glasses with her or something. It's just, like I said, Lex is amazing on the mic, but she's perfected that promo. I remember one night she was talking, she was sad, and she was teary-eyed, and she had me like, man, this is... Alexa's going face, and then she did the heel thing, and I just thought it was perfect. And, like I said, Ruby's great, but she's pretty much established that she doesn't feel bad about anything.
Yeah.
So that you should have came out and said, I don't feel bad at all. You know, that kind of thing. But I get it.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, I agree with... And Ruby might have looked... might have actually seemed like she was a little bit even worse than she actually was to you and I, because we think of this kind of promo as Alexa Bliss's wheelhouse, like you just said, so...
Yeah, she's just so good at it, and of course she's better, because at no point when she was doing Somber, I was waiting for her to flip the switch.
Right, yeah, exactly. Natalya arrives and attacks, but they cut her off pretty quick. They beat her down, they hit her with the heart attack, isn't that what it's called?
Yeah, the heart attack.
There was no match or anything, I think it was just kind of used to, as like a way to progress the storyline for the week. Where are we? Let's go down here to the Raw Tag Team Battle Royal Take Two. That's where we're at now, right?
Yep.
All right. So all the Raw Tag Teams are in there again, and the winning team is going to captain the Raw team in the Tag Team Survivor Series Elimination Match. Man, that was a mouthful. And there wasn't really much to talk about during it. I felt like it was pretty rushed. It only lasted 3 minutes. You know how I feel about matches that last under 4 minutes. They get me all hot and bothered. Yeah. But
it's a battle royal, so yeah, that should be better. No one actually got pinned.
That's true. No one just got overtly buried or anything, you know. But Bobby Roode and Chad Gable won. Not going to hate on that. Love those two guys. Their Survivor Series rules tag team match. Did they say? I think they announced that it's going to be on the pre-show.
It's going to be. I didn't hear that part, but I know it's going to be 10-on-10.
Yeah, man, I think it's going to be on the pre-show. I think that's, I don't know if they said that or if I heard that on Meltzer and Alvarez's show, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be on the, unless they were being facetious, but, you know, I can honestly see it being on the pre-show, to be honest with you.
And I wonder if they're going to do the whole gimmick where if one person gets eliminated, that their whole team's eliminated.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, or are they going to do a 10, you're going to have to eliminate 10 people. So I don't know how they're going to do that. Like I said, it's interesting that they're doing it, and it just feels like, hey, another one of those, let's get everybody on the show. This is how we get 20 people on the show.
Right, right. Yeah, and it's hard for me to get invested in that match because there's nothing on the line. Like, there's no title on the line or, you know, number one contenders match or anything like that. Like, it's just brand supremacy, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's not like it's they're kind of treating it like a sporting event, like Yankees versus Red Sox. But when you watch, like you and I, for instance, we watch Raw and SmackDown. Like, we don't look at them as teams. They're both television shows that we watch both of them. So we're not invested in one or the other, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's just not really a lot on the line, I guess you would say. So, but anyway, you know, they could very easily prove me wrong and have a great match. We'll just have to wait and see at Survivor Series on Sunday. Next we get Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. Dude, I thought Paul killed it on this one, man. Paul does his usual shtick. He praises Braun for almost beating Brock, but reminds us that he ate 5 F5s before he lost. He also,
including one over the top rope.
Oh God, yeah, I know. And I think I said this on our review show for that, but because they didn't use the angle where you could see him hit the floor, like it felt like he just face planted back there. And I thought they played it off good, man. I thought that was brutal. Didn't you agree?
I have not seen it.
Oh, that's right. You didn't watch it. You didn't watch it. Yeah. I forgot about that.
I don't say. I will comment on anything. I have an opinion on anything. I'm not a person that will comment on something I didn't see.
I got you. Fair enough. He also congratulates Braun Strowman for maneuvering his way into yet another title shot. So he says it. We see we hear some loud AJ Styles chants. He then congratulates AJ Styles because the fans believe Styles has a fighting chance based on last year's match. On Sunday, Styles will check into Suplex City and take his beating. He says Styles came close last year, and Brock wants to beat the living hell out of him because of that. Brock wants to suplex F5 and beat Styles on Sunday. Suplex City, F5, and the end. That's not a prediction. That's and a then. Spoiler. Well, yeah. Did he get it off? Did he say that's a spoiler?
I don't think he got it.
Well, he got a. He said that's a prediction, and that's not a prediction. That's and then. Your and I's favorite WWE World Heavyweight Champion of all time, Jinder Mahal, makes his way to the ring, my friend. Did you know what was going to happen as soon as Jinder's music hit?
I looked at this. Only one guy was left in the office, and he doesn't watch wrestling. And I was like, this Indian dude's about to get destroyed. Because he didn't know what he was really watching, so that was why I would have generally said Jinder Mahal, but I was like, you see that Indian dude? He's about to get destroyed.
And boy, did he ever, huh? He got buried quick. Huh? Did you hear Brock when Jinder was like, you know, hey, man, I want to do my thing for you or whatever. And Brock said, you need to listen to this, Paul, because you're Jewish.
Yes.
And the crowd's like, oh.
Yeah.
He's crazy, and dude.
And then Paul gave, I think that was a general reaction. Why did you say that?
Yeah.
Like, dude, I talk. You do not talk. Yeah. Let me do this.
This is why I get paid, so you don't say shit like that.
Yes.
Don't
give Brock Lesnar. Scott Steiner and Brock Lesnar, two people you don't give a live mic.
Right.
What's going to come out of their mouth.
Well, Paul also said something to the crowd. He said, if you don't know who someone is, Google it, because I ain't got time, you bitches, or something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
What did he say? It was something about go Google them, because I ain't got time to teach you everything, bitches, or something like that.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah, he was talking about He was whatever he was referencing the phrase he made. I knew what he was talking about, but he says, "I'm not going to explain it to you." I didn't watch it again, so I couldn't tell you the exact phrasing of it, but I know.
Yeah, who was he talking to? It was something that I picked up, like you said, I picked up on it, like he didn't have to say that. Like, I picked up the reference, but now I'm drawing a blank on what he was talking about. It was a movie or a band or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Gender says, you know, he wants to, well, I think he actually tells him, don't underestimate AJ Styles like he did last year, when you lost focus and, you know, blah, blah, blah. He's here to offer his services on Lesnar, you know, for Lesnar. Brock invites him into the ring to hear about his mantra, and tells Paul to listen because he's Jewish. Gender goes into his bullshit. Brock plays along for a moment and then just straight murders Mahal. Then he murders the Singhs. Dude, those guys need a freaking bonus, man. They get their ass beat down. Between this and... Remember when Randy Orton dropped that one on his head? When he was doing the belly to back suplex onto the announce table?
Yeah. Yeah, and then he kind of like gives the oh shit look.
Yeah, like, oh God. Oh my God, dude. I think when that happened, that was last year, I think. Like, I rewound it like 3 times watching.
That gif, I saw the gif of Randy Orton's face. That's when you know, like, I completely didn't mean to do that. Like, that dude got a steak dinner when he got back there. He's like, dude. He's like, let me pay for your rental car. Let me do something. I landed you right on your head.
Oh, my God. He so did. It was, oh, my God. It was amazing. Oh, man. Anyway. Brock press slams one of the Singhs and throws him onto Jinder Mahal on the floor, and Mahal didn't even catch the poor bastard. Oh, and then Brock goes down and hits Jinder Mahal with an F5 on the floor that looked pretty rough as well, you know. I thought it was great hype from Paul. Brock did well killing the guys. It was a lot of fun. But again, man, those things, they need a bonus, man, or a couple of weeks off or something, man.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing about it is, you know, Randy felt bad. Brock didn't.
No, he didn't give a, he didn't have a care in the world, did he?
He did not care.
What the hell was Bobby Lashley doing with his pre-match posing routine is what they called it?
Dude, this is 80s. Hercules Hernandez heel, you know what I mean? I am better than you because I have this physique and I have this look, and I think they went the wrong way with it. When Leo Rush was coming out at first, and him and Bobby Lashley were kind of faces, it seemed like the crowd was really into it. It seems now the crowd's just kind of bored.
Yeah, and they don't have anything to. I mean, he's just. Yeah, I agree with you. Sorry.
Yeah, and it's just like, even the reactions. You look at those first 2 week reactions, it was like, oh, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then they went the heel way with it. And it didn't turn into booze. It just turned into, like, nothing. Like, they don't care.
Yeah, they didn't even really react last night.
Yeah. It was like the whole thing. So I'm like, this is 80s storytelling.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But everybody wants a nice body. Everybody's on a diet. Everybody's lifting. Like, in the 80s, it was considered, you know, when you worked out a lot, it was like, oh, okay, don't be a workout douche. But, like, everybody you know works out now. You know what I mean?
Right,
as
right.
far as, you know, like, it's not that big a deal. It's like, oh, yeah, I want your physique. So it's not something you really hate people for. Well, hate men for. I mean, unfortunately, we live in a time where women still kind of get hated for that. But men, no. It's not, you know.
Yeah.
Bobby Lashley looking like money is not heel. It's like, yeah, he looks like money.
Yeah. Yeah, okay? I agree. I just, I thought it was kind of, I think I was down typing notes at one point in time, and I look up, and he's, like, bent over, and his ass is like right in the mid, is like center camera, and I'm just like, what the hell is he doing? But anyway, Elias interrupts Lashley, and I think Michael Cole called it his pre-match posing routine, I think is what it says. He gets on the phone, and he says, hello, this is Elias. And he says, is this Child Protective Services? Because I've got Bobby Lashley in the ring, and it seems like he's got a child with him that he might have kidnapped a few weeks ago, and he's held hostage. Got a nice little pop from the crowd, didn't you think?
And then he said, he's like 10. I mean, that's something you can't deny. If Leo Rush is fully clothed and you like walk past him in the fair, you don't think wrestler.
No, you think 14-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he has a very young face and he is very short.
Yep. Yep, I totally agree. How tall is he? Do you have any idea?
I think he's like 5'3". Him and Drake Maverick are about the same height.
Oh, that short?
Yeah, he's pretty short.
Dang, I was thinking like 5'7". I know that's only 4 inches, but when you're that short, 4 inches is a big deal.
No, he's Rey Mysterio short. He's 5'3", 5'4".
Damn, that is small, man. That is small. Elias says,
yeah, they got him listed. They got him listed at 5'6", so you know that means he's like.
Yeah, so that means he's not a hair over 5'4".
Yeah.
Dude, Elias says Bobby Lashley sucks, and he's gonna come down there and shut that toddler's mouth.
Oh, dude, my friend Marco put Elias is my favorite wrestler, because that's what Marco's been saying forever, is that Bobby Lashley sucks.
Yeah.
And again, I gotta give credit to WWE. They're listening to their fans, and they are striking the right tone with Elias.
Yep. Yep. I agree. I don't think Elias has the best in-ring. He's not the best in-ring worker, is what I'm trying to get out. But you strike when the iron's hot, and I think they dropped the ball with Rusev, and they're not making that mistake with Elias at all. I agree with you 100%.
You let him do what he does. He strums that guitar, and then the American audience. I hate when they do this. The Europeans come up with a great chant, and they're good at chanting, and then the Americans try to do it, and the problem is not that the effort's not there. The people that are doing it are great, but it's just that you got so many people that don't do it that it just sounds like a cheap ripoff.
Are you talking about the
walking the lions?
Yeah.
It was like, this is kind of cool that you're trying to pick it up. And if they got the whole crowd doing it, it'd be great. But it was like 100 people doing it really, really loud.
Right. Yep, I agree. So Elias eventually comes down to the ring. They have a match. The match only lasted 2 minutes and 20 seconds. It ended on a count out because Leo Rush held on to Elias's foot from like kind of underneath the ring kind of deal.
Uh-huh.
So Lashley ends up beating Elias in, like I said, 2 minutes and 20 seconds via count out.
Yeah, I don't like the whole thing at the end when Elias was going after Leo Rush and he's running. I mean, Leo Rush is a wrestler.
Yeah.
Why don't he just fight back? You know what I mean?
I guess they're kind of putting over the fact that he's so small.
At your company. You know?
Yeah, it's true.
Promoting as a great wrestler, as an undefeated cruiserweight wrestler.
Yeah. I guess
he just fight back?
Well, I guess they're putting over the fact, you know, that he's so small, he doesn't stand a chance, so he's just trying to get away. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was good comedic relief, I thought, anyway.
Yeah, him running away was, I mean, yeah, like I said, it was comedic relief. But again, they're striking the wrong tone. God, look, you know how many of my friends that don't even watch wrestling hit me up about when he was escaping and how fluid he was when he was moving away from Kevin Owens when Kevin Owens was chasing him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had people giving me that had never watched wrestling. Like, who is this guy? Like I said, sure. I know, I guess they needed a heel, but it's just kind of hitting in the wrong tone. I thought Lio Rush and Bobby Lashley, you could have pushed them in a positive sense, and then you tried to go with a heel, and it's like, it's not that people... I don't feel people feel emotionally strong enough about Bobby Lashley either way to boo him.
Really? Yeah. I can see that.
Because booing is a reaction. It is an emotion. That means I don't like you. Right?
Right.
Cheering, in essence, you might even cheer somebody that you're okay with if they do something you like. You know what I mean?
Right.
But booing, you have to do something I don't like. I don't think any wrestling fan is emotionally involved with Bobby Lashley. If Bobby Lashley stopped showing up next week, I think you could probably go 6 weeks before anyone notices.
Probably so. And that's kind of sad to say, but it's the truth. It is.
He's just kind of, they haven't made you care. Like, we were prepared for him to win the championship at SummerSlam. Yep. You know, everybody, that's what the rumor was. Everybody was prepared for it, and then it didn't happen. And it was like, so what are they doing with you?
Yep.
And it's like, still now, it's like, you're in this, gonna do this mini feud with Elias. What are they doing with you? You look like $1 million. Why aren't you in the main event? Why aren't you jobbing to Brock Lesnar?
Yep.
Something.
Yep, I agree. Next, we get Alexa Bliss naming her women's Raw Survivor Series team. Did I say that right? Raw Women's yep. Survivor Series team, however you want to say it. She names Mickey James, Nia Jax, Tamina, Natalya, and says that the final member will be the winner of the next match, which turns out to be Sasha Banks versus Bayley. The match goes 8 minutes and 40 seconds. It was a 50-50 match. Bayley went for the elbow. She caught knees. Goes into the backstabber, I think. And then Nia Jax, Mickey James, and Tamina all attack. So it goes to a no contest. So there was no winner. And Bliss says, you know, it was all a trap because it's actually Ruby Riott that's going to be the fifth member. So, like I said, the match was going well until the non-finish, which fits Bliss's, you know, story perfectly. She screws over the two friends and makes them fight for nothing. We cut to the back all of a sudden, and we zoom in, or the cameraman goes running into this doorway. And Becky has got the disarmor on Ronda Rousey, dude. I popped so hard when that happened. I was like, oh, what's up? Then Becky... Yeah,
she,
go ahead.
And she kept saying, everybody has a plan until the man shows up.
Yeah, she was. Dude, that was so cold, man. It was awesome. She makes her way to the ring, and the SmackDown women arrive from behind and sneak attack. Yes. And sure,
that
real quick,
question the Raw fans and the Raw people's intelligence, because they just did this last year.
Yeah,
and you know, one person isn't about to try to fight seven of you.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, so I'm wondering what's the combined IQ for all those women that are wrestling for Raw right now. But did you like that Charlotte? Real quick, before we finish talking about this segment. Did you like that Charlotte was there teaming with Becky, even though that they've got a blood feud going on the other show?
If it's consistent with the stories from the past that people put their stuff aside to represent the brand
during Survivor Series weekend.
Yeah, they've done it the last 2 years.
True.
And they've stuck with that storyline.
True.
We hate each other. We'll kill each other, but we hate them more.
Gotcha. Yeah. I wanted your review on it. I actually kind of like it myself. Cause like, you know, I talked about earlier, there's nothing on the line, but when you see something like this, that they're putting feuds aside to team up because they're proud of being on SmackDown or proud to be on Raw and defending, Raw or SmackDown, I'm like, okay, I can get with that. You know what I mean? It's like the All-Star break. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I thought it was cool. Charlotte comes out, the Iconics, Mandy Rose, Sonya Deville was there, Lana was there, Asuka was there.
Yeah, I mean, it was everybody on both rosters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can tell you, they did not practice this.
No.
There was a bunch of standing around looking for someone to hit.
Right, right, right. How did Becky got her nose busted open? Was that real?
By Nia Jax.
So that was a real punch that accidentally did that?
Literally, she was going in to hit Nia from behind, and it looked like Nia just slid her with an elbow on accident, like, you know, kind of reaching back kind of thing.
Gotcha.
It wasn't like she wasn't hitting her. It was more like, oh, you caught my elbow, and it gashed her. Like, a lot of people thought her nose was broken. No, she was bleeding from the side of her nose.
Oh, okay. See, I thought it was her nose too. I didn't know that.
No, like when you look at the if you look at the picture, how it's stained, it wasn't coming out like a nosebleed. It was coming out like from the side of her nose.
I got you. That was the best mistake that's happened in WWE in a long time. Was that right there, dude? She looked so bad ass with that blood when she was talking shit.
Best thing she didn't do is didn't quit. She kept going. She wiped off a little blood, but then came back, and then she was beating up Ronda with a chair and bleeding out of her face. Oh my God, it was a star making. I mean, if most people, if you didn't think Becky Lynch was a star before this moment, you have to think she is now.
Absolutely. I totally agree. If I was going to complain just a little bit about the segment, this is where you kind of seen that Ronda Rousey is still a little green, and that they did, like you said, they did not practice this last segment, because when Ronda came out, she almost lost her footing for one thing when she come running down, because she's still selling the hurt arm, which I did like, but she almost fell coming into the ring. She got a little too wild with the punches, and then Becky, if you noticed, right before Becky hit her with the chair the first time, she had to yell out Ronda's name twice. She was trying not to make it obvious, but she had to yell to remind Ronda of the spot. And then, I thought the segment was amazing. If I was to pick apart something, it just kind of shows that Ronda's still a little green. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's kind of what we're here for, you know.
Yeah, yeah, but overall, I would rather just talk about how badass it was, because with Becky busted open like that, did you not think it was just badass? Like,
dude, it was her WrestleMania 13 moment. It was, you know, it truly is. It's funny how much I love Becky Lynch. Love her. Like I said, I've stood in line 7 times to meet her, you know.
Right.
And so I really love Becky Lynch. And to see someone that you love, that you respect, you notice their journey and how hard they work, and they're finally getting what they deserve.
Yeah.
And this is, it's just everything, and she's doing it with so much swag. She is so much female Stone Cold. I just want her to start using the stunner, man. You know, dude, I just wish you just started handing out stunners, because she has embodied the Stone Cold character more than any man that has tried to rip it off.
True story.
And she's not even trying. She's just being this Becky Lynch character. And that's the best part, is because Stone Cold was so uniquely him that he didn't have to try. And it's like Becky is just, she's channeled it, and she's made it her own, and it's, you know, it's like she's the man.
Right.
She is the man. I even said, I put on Twitter, Becky Lynch is my favorite mythical creature. Because
so true.
She is getting on that kind of level right now that she is like, she's going to be undeniable. They're going to have to book her. They're going to have to put her in the main event because that's what people want to see. I'm excited about SmackDown tonight. And it's Becky Lynch.
Yep.
I want to hear what she has to say.
Absolutely, man. I could not agree more. I'm not even going to try to add on to what you just said because I can't, because you said everything absolutely perfect.
I can't wait to order the man shirt. I know she's going to hear it 100 times, but I just want to uniquely tell her, I'm like, everything you're doing right now, just keep doing it. And if anybody says you have to stop doing it, man, take a advice from Stone Cold, give them the double birds and keep doing you, because this is amazing. But I honestly feel like they booked themselves into a corner because she can't take the L Sunday.
Nope. It would look bad.
She's the man.
Yep.
So at most, I think, and you know, people will hate it, but understand, WWE, I always say, half the people are going to hate you no matter what, so just do what you want. They got to do the double DQ thing.
Yep, I agree.
Out of all the matches, this is the match it actually makes sense on.
Yep.
They're both so hot right now, and it's like, don't give them Becky and Ronda yet. Make them pay for it in Mania.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was firmly Charlotte versus Ronda main eventing WrestleMania. I'm Becky versus Ronda main eventing WrestleMania now.
Yep, I agree 100%. Like I said, I cannot even add anything to that. I'll say one thing, and it's just reiterating what you said, and it is Stone Cold Becky Lynch, dude. She is a freaking beast.
Yes, definitely.
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. I mean, how many people you think saved that picture last night that was circulating online of her with the bloody nose? I know I did. I saved
quite
it.
Quite a few. Let me just tell you, I pulled the stat last night. 47,000 people tweeted about Becky Lynch.
What?
Last night. Austin Creed, Becky Lynch is my favorite wrestler. He tagged that. And so many people said it was just like, that was a star-making moment. You know, I know, not only, we live in that wrestling world, but it's like, my friends that don't watch wrestling, I've gotten messages about Becky Lynch. And to me, that is what people need, is that crossover.
Yep, I agree. That is, one more thing. So, just to finish up. So after all the SmackDown women go through the crowd and are exiting through the crowd, Becky stops at the top of the stairs. She talks some trash. We get a close up of Ronda still in the ring, still selling her arm, which I thought she sold it perfect. She's selling how angry she is. And then we cut backstage, and Baron Corbin's getting his butt chewed out by Stephanie McMahon. And they go off the air. And everyone probably knows this by now, because talking about it started, I think, Thursday of last week. But it's the ending of an era, because we no longer have the Raw runover. Did you notice that? It ended right at 10 o'clock our time. It's 11 o'clock Eastern, I believe.
And with a 3-hour show, I thought the runoff was completely ridiculous.
Absolutely. Yep. 3 hours. There's no sense that the show can't end at exactly 3 hours. SmackDown ends at exactly 2 hours, and it's live, just like Raw is. So no more anywhere. It's usually 4 to 12 minutes, I think, is the average, and it can go all the way up to 15 minutes is what the runoff or runover used to do. The runover is no more. So the show ended at 3 minutes exactly. And I thought it was perfect. Thought it was a great show. I hope we continue to keep doing this, where we just, you and I, talk about the positive things about Raw and SmackDown more so than the negative things. I think the show always goes a lot smoother when we do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it, of course, it helps when you get someone like Becky Lynch getting their nose busted open and talking trash and all that. It's hard to hate on something like that anyway, right?
Yeah, it's definitely hard to hate on.
True story.
She's just amazing. She's you're just so good right now.
Yep. Couldn't agree more, Mr. Floyd. Could not agree more. Well, tell us all, my man. Tell us all where you spend your weekends at.
In lieu of telling you where I am, I just want to send a special RIP out to Stan Lee, who passed away yesterday. Comic book legend. The reason I'm bringing this up on a wrestling show is because a lot of the characters that we have grown to love were inspired by the comics of Marvel and Stan Lee. Even our favorite, one of our favorite legends of all time, Hulk Hogan, his Hulk name comes from the Incredible Hulk. So I want to send an RIP, 95 years old. His effect on pop culture, including our beloved sport of wrestling, is going to be undeniable. It is undeniable.
Yep, I agree. I agree. It was a sad deal to see that he had passed away yesterday, like you said, 95 years old. We wish him the best. Everyone out there, don't forget, we got about 15 seconds left. Don't forget to check out Around the Ring OK. You can find him on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. That's Floyd's show. He's there every single weekend. Check us out at IWR Daily. For Floyd and myself, everyone out there, stay strong and too sweet.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. What is a boy to do?